because Shiv Baba, through the medium of Brahma Baba, tells us that what we have to do is become as much bodiless as we can and as soul conscious as possible, and then connect in yoga with him. And when we do that, it changes us. So this connection between the disembodied or the detached soul in soul consciousness with incorporeal God, that connection opens up a channel of energy, and you draw spiritual power, you draw light into yourself. And that changes the soul's susceptibility to repeating negative karma. So you know that I used the word sanskaras yesterday. So sanskara is this repeated impact on the soul of a repeated karma. So if you, for example, if you get angry, you'll always get angry about the same sort of thing and with the same person, you know. And it becomes like a habit. That's a sanskar. And so the sanskara is an energy that wants to happen again. And you may say to yourself, I don't want to carry on doing this. I want to stop this. This is not a good habit. We use the word habit. And the provocation comes again. And without even realizing, we instantly got angry again. You see. And even if we try, and we make all sorts of plans to not get angry, but somehow it happens again. And so the mechanism or the mechanics of this is that this momentum of the sanskar, whenever that provocation is there, it just sets it off. And we do not have a corresponding opposing force within us to say to that momentum, stop now. So you might have heard in some of the classes that Daddy Jenki has been giving about the importance of learning how to put a full stop. And you put a full stop to your thinking. We know that any action is initiated by a thought. But sometimes those thoughts are so short and so unconscious that we don't even realize that we had the thought. We just see ourselves, oops, I fell in the trap once again and I did it again. So when we're practicing meditation, we're thinking about spirituality, our orientation of our intellect goes more and more towards the inside. And we find ourselves spending a lot of time just surveying our inner landscape. And this is how we come to know ourselves better. Because it is in the inner landscape that all of these personality traits, tendencies, sanskaras, habits, propensities, they are all the population of our inner landscape. So, we want to actually create a different culture on the inside of ourselves. And so for that we have to have a lot of power, because these you can say these little characters, they're character traits, but they're like characters, they have taken over our inner landscape. And if you close the door, it'll be slightly quieter, because that noise is probably interfering with your attention. It's a little bit better, right? So, this is the thing. We have character traits, which are, in a way, like little people inside our head. And they take over everything, and they run the show. And then the real self is somehow kind of left behind, or doesn't know where itself is, doesn't know how to sort out the situation. And the main reason is because the self, the soul, has become weak, and the instruments of the soul, which are the mind, the intellect, and the sanskaras, they're very strong. And they're doing whatever they want, however they want. And so that the master of the consciousness has, there's been some sort of coup d'etat, and we are under the sway of our mind, our body consciousness in the intellect, and our negative sanskaras. And as you have seen probably in the newspapers over the last few months, whenever anyone says, "I think I'm going to overthrow the ruler says, "I think not," and has plenty of ammunition with which to shoot you down and get rid of any kind of new ideas that you might have. And in a very real way, this is the situation that we have inside our own heads. And so the expression that is used in our study, we call it the rule of Ravan. So there is the rule of Ram and the rule of Ravan. So Ram is an expression to refer to God and whatever God stands for. And then Ravan refers to, you know, the devil or negativity or anything like that, the opposite of God. So when Shiv Baba meets us, the first thing he does for us is to give us the experience of what it's like to be at peace. And you must have experienced that at least for a moment or two during the meditation or when you came into this campus, you know, because there's definitely an atmosphere which you can experience quite easily, especially in the moment when you first encounter it. So this experience of peace has a very strong impact on the soul, because the soul says, "Ah, finally, I can feel myself." You know? Because as you know from the word Om Shanti, I, the soul, am at peace. But the current situation is I'm a disturbed soul, and I am out of order, and I can't remember who I am or what I am or what it feels like to be me. I'm confused. I need help. So the first thing he does is gives us this experience of peace. And people, when the soul is very weak like this, they tend to desire peace of mind. And this is why we call the program Peace of Mind, because it addresses exactly what a person is looking for. Now, often, because on the inside everything is so disastrous and disturbed, you start looking for peace externally. You'll find it in nature, You'll find it in some religious places. You'll find it in music, art, different external places. But then Baba tells us that that's very good, but it's very temporary. And the real peace that you are looking for actually lies within. And what you have to do to get it is turn within. But you have plenty of obstacles along the way. And these obstacles are what are called impurities. So impurities are these impacts of negative karma, which is sitting in the soul and standing there between me and my peace. So for I, the soul, to really become truly soul conscious, I have to actually eliminate all these obstacles and blockages and interferences and impurities. So the analogy is given to us of gold. And originally we were 24 karat pure gold. You've heard many times about the cycle, so you know that there is a point in time when we arrive on the earth. And that point where we arrive on the earth is in a state of absolute purity. So in our deep memory, we have that. So part of what meditation does for us is it allows us to access that memory. I remember what I was like. But we've forgotten that to such an extent that when we encounter Brahma Kumaris, we start meditating, we are given by God this very beautiful experience of peace. And this awakens these ancient memories. And shortly afterwards, we become aware, much to our consternation, that there's blockages in between and that we can't have it just like that. We have to actually get rid of these obstructions. And so in the analogy of gold, he will say to us that, look, you used to be 24 karat gold, perfect. And due to the effect of time, you got old. The soul got old. And in the process of getting old, of passing through time, the soul lost power. So one thing is you lost power, not because you did anything, but simply you passed through time and you got old and you lost power. Now, in the cycle, knowledge of the cycle, we say there is the golden age and then there is the silver age. And then between the silver age and the copper age, there is a very big drop in our stage. During the golden age and silver age, we are automatically, necessarily, and naturally soul conscious. And so the karma that we perform during the golden age and silver age is, you can say, automatic. There is nothing in our experience against which we have to react, because everything is in perfect harmony. It's kind of choreographed, and so we dance through those two ages, and we call that heaven or paradise or Bahisht, or there are different names in different languages for this. There's this critical moment where you can say, almost with an analogy connected with the radioactivity, that the half-life of the soul is complete and is no longer in its power, and it becomes affected by circumstances, by other people, and it begins to perform negative karma. So two things. One is you lose power. The other is you fall into body consciousness and you are susceptible to the things that come in through your sense organs. You react to them and you start to build up negative karma. So at first the negative karma is slight and through the Copper Age. And it is during the Copper Age that the major religions and spiritual practices and philosophies get set up, because once the soul has lost this innocence and it's fallen into a state of ignorance, it's from that moment on trying to answer questions. What happened? How do I get this back? What's going on? And it's also from that time that the awareness of God begins. And the awareness of God in the Copper Age takes the form of an ancient memory. Because during the Confluence Age between the Iron Age and the Golden Age, which is the time we're living in now, humanity suffers huge catastrophic experiences. And this experience of catastrophe and God being together is sealed into the soul at this time. Then when we arrive at this confluence between the Silver Age and the Copper Age, there is also a breakdown of the systems in the world, a breakdown of the perfect balance of nature and all the different arrangements that we have during the Golden Age and Silver Age. Golden Age and Silver Age is a very high-tech place, much to most people's surprise. But there is in the world an energy grid which powers all of our systems, our airplanes, our lighting, our we have a telepathic communication with each other. We have all sorts of arrangements. Because the earth is in perfect balance and we are in perfect harmony with it, and it was all set up at the beginning of the Golden Age and it persisted throughout two ages. But the moment where the soul fell out of grace into body consciousness, it created an atmosphere, a vibration of dissonance, and that whole harmonious system of the earth broke up, and the geography changed catastrophically. And this mirrored the experience in the Confluence Age between the Iron Age and the Golden Age, and so it triggers that memory of God. You see. And then we say, oh God, do something. Show yourself. What's going on? Help. And it is in these kind of circumstances that you get many people in different parts of the world doing a lot of thinking. They remember many things, and it is these memories that emerge in visionary experiences that slowly become the scriptures. And then different prophets emerge. There are quite a lot of highly spiritual people around at that time. Not all of them set up major religions, just a few. And so you have Abraham, you have Buddha, you have Vardhamana, well, you might not know who that is. He set up the Jain religion. And you get also a lot of primitive religions in different parts of the world, which are very, very similar to each other. And you have something that we call now Hinduism, which is a kind of the word applied to the agglomeration of the methods and stories and myths and techniques and discoveries and experiences and philosophizing of the different people in India who were remembering what had happened in the other half of the cycle, the other end of the cycle. And so we presumably experienced this long ago. And we passed through the Golden Age, we passed through the Silver Age, we passed through this situation of everything breaking down. We too started thinking, we too started remembering. And we moved along, and we took many births, and we tried to do pure karma, but we found ourselves doing a lot of impure karma anyway. And then finally we reached to the end of the Iron Age, where we are involved in one or another of the faith traditions, and as such we are performing pure karma according to the recommendations of our faith tradition. And we are also usually unsatisfied, and we have a lot of unanswered questions, and we have our own ideas, which other people think we're crazy, and so we're very much in search mode. So we're open to whatever might come along that somehow corresponds with the churnings and thinkings that we have been doing through our lives. And so sooner or later here we are in this room together in the confluence age on Mount Abu, having experienced the Peace of Mind program of 2011. I see. So we come to this present moment, and whatever has brought us to this present moment over the past few days or weeks or months or years, we have started to take in this knowledge which Shiv Baba is giving us. Now what we have learned here at the Brahma Kumaris is that Shiv Baba, God, has been overseeing everything from the Copper Age onwards, and has been giving experiences to the different devotees according to the quality and intensity of their faith. This is how he acts during these days. And then in 1937, more or less, he actually comes physically, that is to say, descends and takes over the body of Brahma and says, okay, I'm here, it's time, the Iron Age is now finishing, and now it's the Confluence Age. And so it's the time for the Golden Age of the next cycle to be set up. This is the time when the Creator performs the work of the creation. And you, Brahma, are my instrument. No ifs, ands, and buts. And so sometimes Brahma Baba would say, I was minding my own business and I got kidnapped. And that's basically what it is. And many of us also feel that too, you know. As soon as you hear this knowledge and it resonates, you can't kind of walk the other way. It's too strong, you know. And so we sometimes say, yeah, you know, I don't have any choice. You can't unknow that you're a soul. You can forget temporarily, but you can't unknow it. You can't unknow that this knowledge is coming through Sheikh Baba, because it's too compelling, it's too strong. And we have exposed ourselves to it so much that it is, you know, in our bloodstream. And that's that. So we say destiny, but we also voluntarily went along with it. So our destiny and our free will go together, and then there's no conflict. Sometimes our destiny and our free will go in opposite directions, and then at that time we have the inner conflict. And this is because of that resistance that I was mentioning earlier. You say, okay, God, now we're all going to become pure, and so I'm going to become pure, and I will meditate, I will be in your remembrance, and then the existing government inside will say, I don't think so. You belong to us, you think you're free, but you're not. And you can't just betray us and go off to the other side like that. We're not going to allow that. And whatever you do in that direction, we will stop it. And this is what you experience inside. Say, okay, now I'm going to meditate. And everything except meditation happens in your head. You must have experienced this. I see. And then you complain to Baba and say, well, what is all this, you know, stuff? And he will say, well, you see, this is your karma. Stop that. It'll probably come again. I'll stop it again. So then we say, full and detailed information, please. And all necessary methods to get rid of it, because we don't like this. And so he will say, okay, sit down and I will tell you everything. And then he says, in a very simple way, really, that the problem is that you became body conscious, you have been body conscious for the last up to, say, about 63 births. You see, because the whole cycle is said to be 84 births. And as you pass through the cycle, the length of your lifespan gets shorter and shorter. You see, because the purer you are, the longer your lifespan is. So in the golden age, everybody lives to a ripe old age of 150. Is that too old? You have perfect bodies, and they are not susceptible to illness or deterioration like we have here. They're very, very good. And life is much slower there, you know. So somebody who lives for 150 years is like they're eternal. It's a very long time, you know. And you'll have your children maybe at the age of 50. So you have a long childhood, you see. And it's a very different type of life, you see. Here and now, life is short, painful, and brutish, you know. And so we feel very, very mortal. And also people are afraid of death. You were mentioning about death earlier. And yes, death is a change of clothes. But the majority of people in this world, they, or maybe, I think it's a majority, they really don't subscribe to the idea of reincarnation. They think this is it, this is life. Short, painful, brutish. And we don't really like it. We would rather be in the light with God. That seems better. And so many people strive for that. And it is also a central tenet of the major religions in the world today, that you go to the world of light, you merge with God, and you remain in light, in bliss, and that is what happens. But God says, yes, that is what happens for many, many people for a long, long time. But there's also other things too. And there are souls who spend a very short period of time in that state of bliss and light and state of being merged, called the state of nirvana. And so those souls who, you know, take many, many births, we call them the old souls. Otherwise, all souls are ageless, but because they spend so much time on the earth and because they come early in the cycle, we say these are old souls. And so sometimes you, when you hear this, you ask yourself this question, am I an old soul? How old am I? You know, well, you're definitely as old as the hills, you know. Been around for a long time. And it's so long ago that you were in heaven that you can hardly remember it, other than in perhaps, it's a nice idea, I think. Good, go to heaven, that's good. But I used to be in heaven, that doesn't really come in your mind. Now, in 63 births, we've had a lot of karma with a lot of other souls, especially a lot of other old souls. And so we keep reincarnating pretty much with the same people. And so we get some karmic account with someone, and then they die and we die, and then we find them again. We come in different relationships and we carry on this account, you know. So yesterday I was talking a little bit about settling the accounts. And so Shri Baba says to us, yes, a big part of your block is your karmic account. Because the karmic account acts like a magnetic force which pulls you away from your desired orientation. And so the being of God, he also calls himself a magnet, that he will pull you to himself. And you experience that sometimes in meditation, that you're just very strongly pulled and you're held in that connection. But if the needle is rusty, then it won't respond to the magnetism so well. So sometimes he says that your karma is like rust on that needle, and you get pulled, or you have no pull from the magnet of God, and on the other hand you also get a strong pull to your karmic accounts, you see. We are again. I knew it would happen. Have you met the last man who bad me from? So he says, "What do we do? What do we do about this?" Yeah? So he says, "There are three things that you can do, or that was going to happen anyway." One thing is, you have to practice to be in connection, in yoga, with God. Because when you do that, you're going to be accumulating power, and while that's going on, it's acting like kerosene on the rusty needle, and it is gradually removing all that corrosion. So that the needle then becomes progressively more easily attracted to that magnet of God. So that's one thing. Second thing is, you're drawing power, and you need spiritual power in order to be able to have the power of your will. Otherwise, you know, there is this expression, would if I could, but I can't. You know, I do not have the power. you make a New Year's resolution on January the 1st and it's over by January 2nd or 3rd. You couldn't keep it up, you know. Because you have to have a lot of power to go in the direction you want to when you've got this resistance that's sending you off in another direction that has been accumulated over 63 births, 2,500 years, thereabouts. So that's a lot of energy to resist, you see. And once you start waking up to the idea that you're a soul and that you have to become pure because the cycle is over and you're going to go back to the soul world and you want to come back at the beginning of the cycle, you have to have enough energy in you to take you all the way around 5,000 years. That's a lot of energy, right? You know how much energy you use in one day? And I don't know how many days there are in 5,000 years, but you can figure it out on your calculator. I see. The energy to live meaningfully, that's a lot, you see. So God says to us, I'm available, you plug in and you take as much as you can, as fast as you can, because there's a limited time during which I'm available. And that is limited by this life. So you have this life. As long as the confluence age is there, as long as he has made himself available, you take what you can because this is your opportunity. And so we do that. Then the other thing he says is, you have incurred a lot of debt. You have done karma, which is negative, and it has negative consequences. So these negative consequences you have to pay. I see. Now you don't remember what you did 15 lives ago. You don't even remember what you did 15 weeks ago. You know? So, but this karma comes with us as a kind of debt, a sort of weight. So the soul is weighed down by this feeling of heaviness. And sometimes it will take the form of illness. So you know that from time to time you will get problem from your body. You can have physical illness. You can even have mental illness. You can have even these days in the field of medicine, they talk about social illnesses. And you can find yourself in a situation where you don't have enough money, where you don't have enough intelligence to look after yourself, where you have such obstacles within yourself that you cannot have a happy life, or you cannot manage to keep a relationship going. All these experiences are forms of purging the negative karma. And you actually need a lot of power to handle those, you see. Because these experiences can be very hard, very devastating for a person to endure, you know. So then their life would be very unhappy life like that, you see. Or if you're in pain, then you have to have medicine. And well, hospital is not where you want to spend your life, you know. So this is a way in which you finish your karma, illness. Now what Sri Baba has told us is, look, if you take a lot of power from me, a lot of light from me, it will transform itself into different forms of energy. Like you will have the power of tolerance, the power to face, the power to accommodate, all these things. And this will help you to mitigate these types of difficulties, and you will get through that karmic payment quicker. It will give you greater resilience and then that account gets settled, you see. So you need also power from God to settle that account. Then the other way that all of this gets purged from the soul is whenever you take a new birth, you leave one body and you go into the womb of your mother that is going to be your next mother. And there you experience a lot of visions of your karma. And you see what you have done that's not right. And you experience in a dreamlike state certain forms of punishment for that, certain types of pain. And you say to yourself, I will not do that anymore. Now I understand. I won't do it anymore. You make promises. But the problem with that is that your sanskaras are not changed from birth to birth. So you make promises, you get born, and you must have seen newborn babies. They look absolutely pure and innocent and sweet. And they are. They have been through this purification process. But by the time a child becomes about 4, 5, 6, 7, they begin to exhibit certain sanskaras, positive ones as well as negative ones. So these negative sanskaras will compel that soul to again perform the negative karmas that it promised not to do, because the soul doesn't have power and the sanskaras are strong. So in this confluence age, we say to ourselves, okay, this being the case, I will change my sanskaras before I leave this body. And Baba says, yes, that's a good idea. Change your sanskaras. And so in order to change our sanskaras, we also need a lot of power. And one of the powers that you get through yoga is the power to discern, and a power to judge. And we use that for external things, but we also have to use it for internal things, because I need to know very clearly what my negative sanskaras are. And there is a very extraordinary phenomenon that gets in our way, and we call it our ego. And our ego is such a thing that we cannot see it. Everybody else can see it. You see? And sometimes they even tell us, oh, you have this ego and that ego and the other. And we say, nope, we do not. I am very fine. Something wrong with you? You can't see it. And so we need to actually become quite dispassionate about ourselves and develop the ability to really look at ourselves and be so truthful that the false ego becomes visible. Because until it becomes visible, we cannot shoot it down. You can't. So there is the analogy in the Gita, one of the scriptures of India, the Gita, which is embedded in the Mahabharata, the story of the Mahabharata. And in there is one of the Pandavas called Arjun. And all the Pandavas are warriors, so they have to study archery. And so Arjun was the only one who passed the test given by the master. Because the master would ask the students to shoot a bird in the eye. And so he would get them to the target and say, okay, what do you see? So as we move forward every day, we experience different varieties of obstacles. Could be in our relationships with people, could be to do with how we earn our living, could be with our body, could be any number of things. And this is why we feel, once we have tasted a little bit of yoga and the powers of yoga, we feel, yes, I have to every day top up, because every day we are using that energy. And we know too much to be able to be as we were previously, affected, negatively affected by different obstacles. So gradually we learn skills, how to manage all these obstacles, and how to not increase the negative habits that we already have, but rather starve them. You know, like if you have a plant and it needs water and sunshine every day, but if you deprive it of water and sunshine, it'll die. And so we have all these negative sanskaras growing as a big forest inside us, and we're trying to have a garden. And the garden is basically made up of virtues and, you know, a civilized state of being. We create our personal ethical policy, and we want to conduct our affairs according to our conscience. And so we say to ourselves, this is me, this is how I will live, and these are my principles, and that's that. You see? And so we want to become like this pure, virtuous, wise, upright people, you see. And when Baba is describing the deity, it's exactly that. It's a human being who operates on the basis of wisdom, virtue, values, powers, and is true to themselves, and conducts their life in a manner that is, you know, pure, exemplary, right. And so we start doing that, and then we make mistakes. This is normal, right? We make mistakes. You forget things. You get irritated when somebody wants you to do something and you want to do something else. We get interruptions, or something doesn't work. Your computer doesn't work, your phone doesn't work, your car doesn't work, your child doesn't do what you want, you see. So all these things put us back where we were. And so we find that on a daily basis, continual process of cultivating the garden and weeding out the negative weeds which just keep on coming. This is normal. So any of you who've ever tried to grow a garden, you know that you have to pay attention all the time. You have to give water, you have to give sunshine, you have to give fertilizer, and you have to remove the pests and the plants that you don't want and all this kind of thing. So this is our lifetime work. And so every day, as often as we can, we try to continue to take power from Baba, because that way we're able to actually neutralize negative emotions as they arise within us. We're able to gradually see how our ego is functioning. And the ego is very interesting. That's a whole nother class, you know, for us to do, which we wouldn't have time to do today. But it is this mask that we have created, and we operate through this mask without realizing what we're doing. And so you get a lot of clashes between different people's egos, and that creates discord and disharmony and general turbulence in the world. So we try to create karma with God, you see. And this is what he recommends. He said, okay, I'm here, I'm among you, I'm talking to you, I'm your friend, I'm your teacher, I'm your father, I'm your mother, I'm your guide. Now you can have your karma with me. And then you perform roles with other people according to your duty. So he gives us this concept of duty. And it's to do with the role we play. So you look at yourself and you see the different roles you play. And most people, they are parents. They will have children. They will have a spouse. So you have to play your role as a wife or a husband very accurately with that other soul. Or as a parent, you have to play very accurately with those children. Or with your colleagues at work, you have to play very accurately. And so Shri Baba gradually teaches us more and more refined details of how our karma can be accurate. And one of the things he says to us is, play your role as an instrument. As an instrument. Follow the directions that I will give you. Because we're actors in a drama of which he is the director. And constantly through the day you find yourself in different little situations. And one situation moves into the next and the next and the next, you see. So that right now from somewhere around 11 o'clock we've all been together in this situation of I'm talking and she's translating, and sometimes you give in some questions. And that's the scene that we're playing. And so I'm playing the role of, you know, talking person, and you're playing the role of listening and processing, and that's the role, you see. And then a certain time will come, say in about 15 minutes, when we'll say, okay, we'll stop now. We go for lunch. So then this role is over. And the relationship between each other in this situation is finished. And then we put on our shoes and we go off to the dining room and we play with different people. We go and eat, you know. And then that's over. And then each one of us independently will decide what we do next, you see. And like that, we're kind of moving around, interacting with each other, coming into different situations. But he says, while you're doing this, try to be a karma yogi. A karma yogi means that you perform your karma in my remembrance, you see. Because whenever you do any karma in remembrance of God, that karma is actually with God. You see. So if you're talking to another person in remembrance of God, you're not actually having karma with that other person. It's instrumentally. But your actual karma is with God, because you're very conscientiously doing what it is you're doing in His remembrance. You're trying to do it exactly right, and so on and so forth. So your karma is with God, you see. But when you forget, then your karma is with the person. So, because it's quite difficult in the sense of it's very subtle to keep yourself in remembrance of God all the time. Because it slips. You forget. And then you engage with people. And once you've engaged with them, then your karma is with them. And then we have to be careful that the karma that we do is, he says, make your karma mutually beneficial. We do easily have emotions aroused within us. And whenever these emotions come along, they pull us into what we call body consciousness. and then we start to do a karma which would be waste, meaningless, negative, inappropriate, unnecessary. It comes in these different types of categories, and then overall we would put it as negative. And so then we're creating more negative karma that we have to then deal with, you see. So in the process of moving from the beginning of the confluence age to the end of the confluence age, we are slowly transiting and shifting our karma, being less and less heavily engaged with people, make it lighter, make sure that I, the soul, am in my self-respect. He talks to us about that a lot. Be in your self-respect and act with the other people according to that. And if they are not in their self-respect, that's not your problem. You stay in your self-respect. And you perform your karma in your self-respect, in remembrance of God, and do the right thing. You see. And then if the other person does something negative to you, for example, he often gives this example. Suppose that somebody will tell you something insulting. It happens, you know. So if you feel insulted, then it means you're operating from your ego. And that's body conscious. And so you have to drop that. You have to work on yourself in such a way so that an insult is coming, but you don't actually take it as an insult. You turn it around and take it as a compliment. And if you do that, then whatever negative karma you have, which is attracting that insult from that person, because you've turned it around, you actually finished that karma. So that requires skill. Yeah. I mean, it's called easy Raj Yoga, but it's not that easy. You know. And of course, if you try and do it at this level, you will say, oh, no chance, you know. But you just do a little bit at a time, you see. And very slowly, very gradually, with all of these elements operating together, you will find that your karma changes, your sanskara changes, your character changes, your sense of heaviness shifts, and you become more and more light. You're less and less reactive. Your ego starts melting away. You don't get angry so easily. You are less dependent on people, less emotionally up and down. You can handle your feelings more easily. So it's a continuous process, and we watch ourselves all the time, every day. And whenever we do make a big mistake, which we all do from time to time, then you see we will take time, we'll sit with ourselves and say, okay, what is this? You know, what happened here? What is it about me that allowed this situation to escalate or to get out of order? You know, and why did I not behave the way I thought I should behave, and why did I do this other thing, you see? So you look at yourself, watch each bit. It's like you replay your video of your scene of that situation and analyze it from a few different angles. And of course the other person is doing various things that you could complain about, but you see, we can't do anything about them. And it's already passed. But what we really have to look at is me. What exactly did I do? What did I feel? What did I think? How did I interpret it? You know. And exactly what reasoning did I use, or even at very high speed, which made me behave in a certain way, which later on I see it was not the right thing. And if I would replay that scene, you see, you can replay that scene and make yourself play it a little differently. You see, that if you hadn't got upset, what could have happened? If you hadn't responded quickly, but you would have delayed your response, what could have happened? You see, so you replay the scene as if you were playing it in a few different ways. And then you decide what would be the good way, you see. And then that scene will certainly come up again in some similar form. And because you sat with it and you analyzed it and you observed yourself, what is it that you did that caused that scene to be in your memory as a negative scene? And what can you do to make it as a positive scene, you see? Then you're very well prepared for when the next time it comes along, because it surely will. And most of these things that happen, they happen in daily routine and daily relationships. So the main field of action in which you have to deal with the phenomenon of your distortions in yourself is in your people who live at home, people you work with, people you see every day. Yeah. And these are the people with whom you have karmic accounts. So that the people that you live with, the people that you're with all the time, there is an energy holding you with those people, which is called a karmic account. And it is also an energy which will press your buttons and set you off and make you do the wrong thing no matter what. Do you find this? And so those people have been specially placed in your life to give you a hard time. And their karmic accounts. And you have actually brought them into your life somehow. And these are the first class perfect people to give you everything you need to make yourself exactly the way Baba would like us to be. Because they'll set you off every time. And you have to be able to not get set off. You see? And you're given 10, 20, 30 years with these different people to get it sorted out. So there's no rush. Of course you would like it done immediately. But you have to see it in the context of the cycle of time. That we got ourselves in these situations over a long, long period of time. And we want to resolve all these things in 5 minutes. So it can't really be done in 5 minutes. But each and every day we just take a few little baby steps towards an aim which becomes clearer as we keep it in our mind, and gradually you experience improvement. And this is sustainable change. If you do very dramatic change, you find it's very hard to sustain. You can't. One of the difficulties that a lot of people have is perfectionism. Anybody here a perfectionist? Perfectionism. Yeah, everything has to be perfect, and at all times, and you have to be perfect. I don't have to be perfect, but everybody else does, you know. But a perfectionist.
You want it right.
Yes, 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 exactly. And so you become hell for everybody, you know, and then they react to you, and then that's hell for you. So when Baba talks to us about perfection, it's very different from perfectionism, you know. Or another word that people use for this is control freak. You know, it's got to be, nobody can move without my say-so, you know. Because I have to have control of everything, otherwise I don't know what's going to happen, you know. There are many people with this going on inside. And so what Baba says to us is perfection is balance. is flexing with different sanskaras, moving yourself. You know, like when you're in a yacht, I don't know if you've ever done sailing, but if you do sailing, you have a sail and the wind is blowing in some direction, but it's not usually behind you, sending you forwards. You have to go tacking this way, that way, in order to get where you want to go. And so you just kind of shift like this and use the wind and adjust your sail in order to get where you need to go. And in this way also, we have to be balanced, we have to be flexible, very understanding of other people, taking into consideration their ways, you see, because their ways are very different from our ways. But when you put their ways and your ways together, then there has to be some compromise in order to move at all. Otherwise it becomes rigid and we get into breakages, breakdown relationships and so on. So he teaches us to be balanced, to say, okay, it is drama, you know, that's the destiny, it's like this, nothing I can do, so okay, you do a bit of accepting, and then there are moments when, yes, it has to be like this, so okay, do a bit of this, and like this, just shifting all the time between applying your will, your choice, your system, flexing, going along with other person's system. Okay, you like blue, I like green. Well, it's okay, we can have teal, you know, we can have we can work with it, you see. So it's we learn a lot of negotiation in our relationships with people. Also, we become very hard on ourselves when we're perfectionist. You know, we push ourselves too hard and we give ourselves a heart attack, and then you have to say, lighten up, ease off, you know. Pace yourself in a sustainable way. See, so these are, you know, it's a very, very high philosophy, and then it has to be brought down into the reality of day-to-day life with real human beings and real situations and real, you know, obstacles. And we just, you know, try to be with God as much as possible, try to have as much meditation as we can, and slowly, slowly move towards this very extraordinary goal of a completely balanced person, which is represented by the image of Vishnu. You see, in this badge that I have and other people will have, you see a picture of Lakshmi and Narayan. These are two people. So the fundamental base of human society is the couple, the man and the woman, living together in harmony, in balance, complementary, you see. But in the world today, we find between men and women there's a lot of antagonism, there's a lot of disequilibrium, and we are at war mostly. And then between men and men, and between women and women, and between elders and youngers, and people of different colors and different castes and different religions, and lots of opposition is there. And so God wants us to come into harmony, come into balance, and it's a daily movement. Even if we move just a millimeter ahead, it's still ahead. You see, eternity is a long time. And so we move forward, we push ourselves a bit, not too much. Because if you push yourself too hard, you can't keep it going. So you have to find your pace where you can actually get a rhythm of meditation going, get a rhythm of self-observation going, and forgive yourself for your mistakes, and just tell yourself each thing is a rehearsal for the next one. And then you'll be able to actually move forward through this confluence age and reach the goal. And Baba says that he is the creator and he is creating us the way he wants us to be. And he will be successful, and we will reach, and have that faith. So I'm going to stop there. Oh, our noise has started up again. We can just have a few moments of meditation. And is anybody still here tomorrow? You are here? Yeah? Would you like us to meet again like this tomorrow? Yes? Okay, so we can... Yeah, I'm here. I'm available. And so let's plan on meeting here at 11 o'clock tomorrow and continue further. Om Shanti. So we'll just have a few moments silence.